Hey everyone, welcome to No Cartridge. This is a Patreon episode because it's a sort of consideration of stuff that might not be super relevant or super coherent, but is sort of on my mind right now. I wanted to talk a little bit about the topics we were talking about in this week's full episode with Alex Deegan, particularly this idea of AI, right? Sort of like making human of the digital. And of course, you know, what Deegan and I sort of ended up deciding on in that episode is that it's not the same. Like AI as a sort of like comprehensive human replacement is far overblown. What we're really talking about when we talk about that is machine learning, and machine learning is something quite different. But I was recently playing MiHoYo's sort of less popular, extremely popular cash grab, Honkai Impact, from the makers of Genshin Impact, a game that I actually really, really enjoy. And it got me thinking because the series actually does some interesting stuff around AI, and I thought that it was worth engaging with. So the funny thing about Honkai Impact is it's a gacha game. It's free, but of course, you know, they make you want to pay money to make pulls and get the right characters and stuff like that. It's definitely, you know, like you find the girl you like the most and try to pull her or whatever, right? When you pull for characters. That's how it's framed anyway. And in a lot of ways it's clunky to start off with. It's a weird sort of approach to the genre. It feels dated in a lot of ways because it is an old game. But the funny thing about Honkai Impact is that it kind of represents a lot of the same tendencies that I guess what I'll call like spoonful of sugar media gets you. People are comparing the sort of end arc of it to Evangelion, and Evangelion's similar in this way, where you sort of get an anime about cool robots and attractive like pilots and stuff like that, and like action and cool monsters and all. And then you know, it ends up being about kind of existentialism and the soul and religion and stuff like that as well. Even something like Hegel's Phenomenology of Spirit, you end up getting this as well. Like every other section is Hegel coming up with a metaphor, a sort of like thought experiment to get his ideas across. So you get something like, you know, like what if there were two worlds, or like, I mean, even like the master-slave dialectic, you think like you get a whole story about a master and a slave and their power dynamics prior to even getting to the point about the dialectic. It is, you know, a spoonful of sugar. You get a fun story, and then once you're invested in the story, you're willing to go a little deeper with the more difficult ideas as opposed to being presented with them up front. Honkai Impact's a really, really good example of this in that, you know, the game itself is largely about, you know, it's an anime game. It's about people fighting giant monsters and forces beyond their control and romance and stuff like that. It's all what you'd expect. But especially towards the end, towards the last, like, I'd say year and a half of content, there's a lot of kind of, like, difficult... They sneak it in terms of difficult sort of metaphysics to describe where the characters are coming from or where they've been or why they're changing or whatever. But then in a kind of really interesting move, they also add in questions about kind of the nature of the conflict that they're talking about and the nature of humanity. Because in the game, you know, the central conflict in Honkai Impact is that these monsters called Honkai, and particularly their sort of like avatars, the Hershers, are... you know, sort of like the natural enemy of humanity trying to destroy humanity. And we find out this happens, you know, over a cycle of time, keeps happening. It's a real problem, for lack of a better word. And, you know, one of the things that's asked throughout is like, well, so, okay, what's the solution to this? And there's basically three solutions. There's sort of like an active solution, a defensive solution, and then a solution that has, you know, in the most recent patch or most recent series of story sort of been put into place, which is a totally transformative solution, which is to say transforming the idea of humanity entirely so that, you know, what has to deal with Honkai or what has to deal with the world itself is no longer human. therefore solving the problem, the conflict at the core of the game. And, you know, that's interesting enough on its own. It sort of probably would deserve some time. But there's a really interesting preface to that question, which is, it was a funny move. At sort of like the emotional climax, as a friend of the show mentioned to me, sort of at the emotional climax, they they introduce friend of the show at @slowdreamer_, my friend Evan, you know, pointed out that like they introduce this climax of emotion sort of around chapter 26, 25, and then immediately they retreat into this thing called the Elysian Realm, which is a simulation of one of the characters goes into this. They have to go and train in the simulation with people who fought Honkai 50,000 years ago and have been forgotten other than in the sim, right? Two of the characters, you know, are alive in the current day. No real reason to explain why, but these older characters exist within the sim. And, you know, you as a player have to sort of learn about them and stuff like that. And so initially it feels like a real roadblock, like, okay, I just got to this really cool part. Like, I want to know what happens with these characters. And now I have to learn about these people who are long dead 50,000 years ago. I'm like learning backstory, right? Is this just exposition about what Honkai is? Okay, fine. Like take your medicine, just like figure it out, just get through it. But slowly but surely, the game kind of gets you connected to the 13 Flame Chasers as you know them, and they're 13 new characters, some of whom are playable, some of whom are not, but they all exist within the sim. They're most of them long dead. And you sort of, like, you start grappling with this question, right, of, you know, what does it count that, like, that's the wrong way to say it. What is the purpose of these characters if in fact all they do is simulate, right? Like they are a collection of memories that cannot change. They're purely digital. Why should we be connected to them, right? There are crises in the realm that you have to solve, but why should anyone care, right? Like these are just simulations. If they went away, it's not actually a big loss. But of course, as a character, you start become attached to these people and you know, you do feel the connection. And one of the things I really credit Honkai with is at the end of the sort of massive arc with the Elysian Realm, where it does, in fact, spoilers for this game that will take you way too long to get through, but you should try it if you at all interested. I very much sincerely do enjoy it. You know, the climax of it all, when the Elysian Realm, again, spoilers, gets destroyed and deleted, essentially, they really do make it crystal clear, and I appreciate this. Actually, it's sort of a funny thing to say, but it is that whole like Garth Marenghi, I know authors who use subtext and they're all cowards kind of thing. But it makes very, very clear that the point of this whole journey into learning about these people and becoming attached to them and stuff like that is that the only thing that makes the simulation in the game worthwhile, or sort of like have any sort of like a connection back to the world, right, is your participation with it, the character's participation with it, Riot and May's participation with it as a real person, right? So the computer parts themselves seem to kind of instantiate the AI myth of like, okay, these simulations are just as good as people. You're becoming emotionally attached to them. And then at the end, they basically say, like, no, the only reason it actually, like, feels that way, the only reason it's good, right, the only reason it feels like we're real and we can feel like we're real is because you, a person, is here interacting with us, right? And in fact, in sort of, like, other explicit ways, in other events and stuff like that, but also implicitly in this moment, the inverse is true, right? Where it's saying basically to the player, like, the only reason any of this counts or is sort of emotionally relevant is because you, the player, are engaging with it, right? In some ways, this sort of sounds like reader response theory, right? The idea that, which is old-fashioned at this point, but, you know, still a touchstone in some literary criticism, where the reader themselves occupies sort of a central part in the making of meaning in texts. But I think more importantly, it sort of suggests the importance of the individual or the human interaction. The absolutely terrible Michael Knowles who has just been around all the time recently saying ghoulish stuff on the Daily Wire, said something today about, and some people were sharing it around, and for my sins, I listened to it, something about like how, you know, not everything is related to demons, but maybe AI is. And his point was that, you know, he called them the libs because he's very, very cool. But anyone who's not, you know, a conservative Christian, he would say, believes that evil is personal, right? It has a personification, whereas his argument is evil is purely spiritual. And in fact, like if you think about the devil is a spiritual evil, not a personal evil. Now, of course, you know, we can pick this apart like pedants all we want and say, well, it's not very Miltonic of you, et cetera, et cetera. But the point here I'd like to make is less about why he's wrong, because obviously he's wrong. It's not demonic. AI isn't demonic. We talked about that in the last episode. But even more so, the concept of evil and the kind of connection of temptation and the humanization of AI and the humanization of things that are not real, really human, rather, the anthropomorphizing of things, always comes back to this individual connection, right? The idea of a spiritual connection is at core also an individual connection. This is a dialectic, right? The two opposites actually sort of correspond into what we would call meaning, right? The contradiction between the spiritual and the individual, in fact, creates a certain kind of like existential meaning. And that does not, that's not a, you know, necessarily has to be religious, although it certainly could be as well. And I think the game actually does a far better job of dealing with this than Knowles, no surprise, but also than a lot of like kind of AI critics. You know, it goes into these extraordinarily complicated propositions about repetition of you know, electrons being sort of repetitions through time of one single electron, or lives being lived again and again and again, sort of a cycle of samsara, or which it, you know, literally proposes, or a sort of a metaphysical samsara. The idea of, you know, essentially being on a quantum level, all this stuff, right? And some of it's junk science. Like, listen, it's a fun game. It's not, you know, you're not going to a lecture. I'm sure that you can poke holes in it. I'm not a physicist, so I'm not ready to do so. But the point is, it creates these extraordinarily complex ideas and these extraordinarily complex questions, one of which being like, you know, what if you did repeat over and over and over again and had different lives? Would it matter? Well, one character says no, because you could never actually know that, you know, you lived those lives. So what does it matter? And the other says, well, it's like the rich man and the poor man on the beach. They're suntanning. The rich man's, you know, they're both suntanning, right? So there's no way to tell if they're rich or poor. But the woman says, the character says, but that's sophistry because, in fact, the rich man has lots of leisure activities and the poor man can only sunbathe. And it's like this, it's really kind of a beautiful, I'm explaining it badly, but it's a beautiful sort of like teasing out of an extraordinarily complex intellectual idea that the audience has purchase in because they've been with this game so long. They have a time commitment to it. They have a commitment to the characters and want to know more. And that commitment to the characters, right, the sort of like engagement on the idea level is that human engagement that the characters say, you know, like that has to be there in order for these AIs to mean anything, right? So ultimately what the game proposes that I think is a really interesting way to think about games in general is that the games exist as the sort of like palette for expression, but in fact require someone to engage with that expression in order to be meaningful, which is to say digital art and digital creation is, as all other art is, reliant on its audience to give it some sort of structure and I guess you would say like generalized meaning, or less than meaning actually, structure and existential importance, relevance, and let's just say meaning, right? Like meaning actually kind of lines up here. Anyway, just something I thought was interesting. You know, the idea of an AI world finding purchase and material reality vis-a-vis the memories it makes with a human mind is a much more tangible and realistic version of what you would get from the digital meets the human or whatever, like the flesh space meets the digital space. You know, we get the, oh, it's about to overcome you, you know, like get ready, poets, you're out of a job. Whereas really it's simply another opportunity for the poetic or interpretive mind, or even just the sort of willing mind, to engage with something different and go away bestowing it with significance on their own. Anyway, hope you enjoyed that. Thinking of maybe doing a couple more of these shorties to kind of supplement later the episodes I put out each week. But in the meantime, thanks for subscribing. Thanks for being a patron. And hope to see you soon.